Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
White, going to jab steps, comes up shooting top three, bam! Put him in the Hall of Fame!
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
What more y'all want me to prove, man?
Levine with a runway, lays it in! Zach Levine!
Find that man every time down the floor.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Joining me now, Matt Peck, Locked On Bulls podcast, producing podcasts left and right, even in the offseason.
On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck.
I don't have Twitter. I don't do anything like that.
And I love what you guys do with the show. I listen to every episode. You guys are one of the best podcasts, period.
Y'all keep doing what you do best. I love you guys.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
It's raw.
You can just see the vibe.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Okay, cool. I was hoping it wasn't one of those knucklehead programs.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us at 331-979-1369. Hopefully you guys have been enjoying the last 2 days of Media Day. What seems like now is what we should probably call Media Week, considering all the Zooms going on, but training camp underway. Very excited to hear from a handful of different players, and Billy Donovan especially, the last couple of days. Very excited to be talking with you, Matt, though. How you doing, man? And are you enjoying all these conversations and fresh faces from the Bulls so far in the first few days of Media Day?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Doing well. Excited to be one day closer as we're recording here. On Thursday, we are just a week from tomorrow is now the mark of when we get our first Bulls action since March. I don't even care that it's preseason. I just can't wait to watch this Bulls team play some five-on-five against a real NBA team. And yeah, it's been awesome to just see the readiness and level of excitement from the players and also the new front office and the new head coach and this media availability. Obviously it's a little bit weird and a little bit different this year. Instead of one big giant media day, they're splitting it up and just doing Zoom conferences throughout the week. So it's kind of weird, but those are the times we're living in, but it still doesn't take away from the excitement for me. And of course, you know, the other big news of the past, you know, 24 hours or so is that as all these young Bulls are eager to take the next step forward in their young careers, we are likely facing the end of the career of a Bulls legend, one Joakim Noah.
That is true, and it is good for him, though. Like, if he's going out, he's going out on his terms, too, and it was very, very, it's a very cool story to think about him coming back from the Knicks and the disaster that was and how that was going to pretty much end his career. And then he had like an enlightening moment and was able to battle all the way back and find his way onto two different rosters. Congrats to him. And again, Matt, as a younger fan who wasn't able to experience the 90s, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, and Joakim Noah were my young Bulls fandomhood. So he had an amazing career. And I don't know, but do you think he's... He's not a Hall of Famer, is he? But he's like, well, he's in the class of damn good players, right? But just misses the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think Hall of Fame is a bit of a stretch. But I mean, still two All-Star appearances, several All-Defensive teams, including a Defensive Player of the Year in 2014, a year in which he also finished in top five MVP voting. I mean, just a perennial go-to guy, you know, along with Luol Deng, somebody who would be called a glue guy back in the old Tibbs days. He was the heart and soul of this team, and he was the heart and soul of the city. And I think that as much as Bulls fans, you know, you said like yourself, for a younger generation who really fell in love with the team because of a young rising star like Derek, who was also from the city, you know, we marveled at Derek's talent, but the city fell in love with Joakim's just raw emotion and how much he truly cared about representing the city and the team. even, you know, talking on when he was drafted back in the day in that ridiculous suit, talking about how as a kid growing up being a Knicks fan, he hated the Bulls and that the Bulls made him cry because the Bulls were always beating the Knicks. But knowing how much it meant for him to put on that Bulls jersey and put on that Bulls hat on draft night because he knew just how iconic this organization is for everybody that grows up loving basketball. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, this might be the end of the road for his playing days. I have seen some Bulls fans on Twitter suggesting over the last day or so that the Bulls should bring him in as a player coach, you know, something that we haven't seen since back in the day with the Celtics. But, I mean, whether it's just like a one-day contract, you know, to retire officially a member of the Bulls is something this organization did for Luol Deng just last year. I'm guessing that they will do something like that with Joakim. And it would be great if they could have some kind of retirement ceremony for Joe where he gets to reunite with his college coach, Billy Donovan, who he won two titles with. But here's the hang up for me, and this is so important. You can't have Joakim's retirement night this season at an empty United Center. You just can't. So if you have to wait a year for his official retirement ceremony, that's fine, because there need to be 20,000 people in the United Center on their feet giving him a standing ovation.
100%, man. I'm with you. And like to have his teammates there too and be able to speak to the fans too, like he meant so much to such a weird era of Bulls basketball that fell with a lot of expectations, a lot of hope, and there's a lot of disappointment too and a lot of anger. And there's always going to be that what if about that team, you know? As much as we hear conversations from different guys like Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose and even Joe himself in Derrick Rose's documentary, just listening to those guys talk about how close that team was together, there's always going to be that what if. So I think that the storylines and the team as a whole, that 3 or 4 year core group of guys will always be talked about in some sense here in Chicago as one of the best teams. And one of those teams that the entire city was behind for 3 or 4 years. It didn't get to the ultimate conclusion we wanted, which was a championship. But I still think his impact here on the city and what he was able to do for a very long time as a big man, everybody kind of doubted him. I even remember back to, like you said, that draft night. There was a lot of Bulls fans that didn't want him either. And they were like, why are we taking this guy? Like, what is he going to do for us? He ended up being one of the best picks the Bulls had ever made. And
yeah, you know who hated the Joakim pick on draft night? I'll give you one guess.
Oh.
Pound sand.
Yay, there it is.
Oh man. But to Joakim, like, and man, if he wants to become a coach, like even if he's having a thought about that, Michael Reinsdorf and anybody in that front office should pick up the phone immediately and say, hey, man, even if you want to take a year off, that's cool. But if that's ever in the back of your mind, you ever want to coach or be a bench coach or a mentor, hit us up because we've got plenty of young players that could learn a hell of a lot from you. And I think Bulls fans would be thrilled if you would want to coach and be at the end of Billy Donovan's staff. But I think that's kind of a long shot. Joakim seems like a guy that wants to go and enjoy his time off.
Yeah, and I don't know if you have been following along with Joakim's Instagram stories over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months since he left the bubble, or those of his supermodel fiance, which, by the way, kudos to Joakim. I mean, great pull. Way outkicked his coverage there, even for Joakim. They look to be having a really, really fun life right now, and I'm happy for him.
Hey, man, I don't blame him. Go somewhere warm, somewhere nice. He's got all the money in the world, so good for him. But yeah, it is sad. It's sad. It's another player that is part of that Bulls team that now is out of basketball. But I think all the memories are good, and I wish I hope people think about him in the good, the positive light, as opposed to some of the darker ending days to his career, trading him to the Knicks and all of that.
I mean, his 13 should be in the rafters, in my opinion. Some people think that's like he didn't do enough. And we know that the Bulls are fairly stingy when it comes to retiring numbers. I mean, Bob Love, Jerry Sloan, Michael, and Scotty. That's it. That's the list. Like, they haven't even retired Norm Van Leer's number yet. But I think when you talk about who is the next and most deserving Bull to have their number hanging in the rafters, the conversation starts with the trio of Norm, Derek, and Joakim.
100%. And maybe there's one day in the near future that does happen, which I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe once Derek's out of basketball in a few handful of years, maybe then they start having those conversations. But I do agree with you. I think there's definitely a conversation to be had. If not that, maybe a statue or something. Something we were talking about like a year ago about Derek Rose when we have these conversations about whether his jersey should be retired or not. But I think there's a better conversation like we were talking about with the Hall of Fame to kind of wrap this up. Is his championships in college and his impact in college basketball too. I don't think you combine that with his impact in the NBA. Remember, it's a basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. So I think maybe he's got a better shot than we think, or maybe that makes his competition even better. I'm not sure, but I'm sure there'll be conversations over the next couple of years surrounding Joakim and whether or not he's a true Hall of Famer or not. But whether he is or not in Chicago, he'll always be a Bulls, one of the Bulls greats.
Yeah. I mean, do sound bites also qualify for, you know, Hall of Fame resume? Because if so, then he's a shoo-in.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It's great that, as you know, some people were reflecting over the last, you know, day or so about Joakim's departure. Everyone in Chicago media who has spent, you know, time covering Joakim for some or all of his 9 years with the Bulls have nothing but amazing things to say about Joakim. And not only that he's a great person, but as people working in media, one of the greatest sound bites you could ever get out of a professional athlete.
That is true, man. I think about like the press conferences he would have, and he's like, "Nah, man, don't like Cleveland. What's so good about Cleveland? Like, you really want a vacation here? Like, what's going on here?" And like, even those, like, remember those little cutaway TNT interviews they would do too, where they'd have a player sit down and ask him like one question, transitioning between quarters. Joakim's would always be so funny. He'd just be so candid. So you're right. You're right, definitely. And it's far and few between those players and Joakim breaking out of his shell a little bit more, be a little bit more comfortable to talk to people. It's great. And we love guys here that are honest and straight up about how they feel and what they're thinking. I think that's maybe why I like Zach so much. He's just straight up and honest about how he feels. And the talent backs it up, too. But Matt, we've got a lot to...
Yeah, that's a good point about Zach.
We got a lot to get to. As far as Billy Donovan and maybe hearing from a couple of the players over the last couple of days. But before we do that, want to talk to our friends about Built Bar. Built Bar, I'm going to tell you guys about their 12 original flavors, including some of my favorites, peanut butter, banana bread, mint brownie, salted caramel, and double chocolate. They have 6 new flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Built Bar is great for the healthy conscious guy or girl in your life. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. They're great for the keto diet. One of my favorite bars is the peanut butter bar. It's covered in 100% chocolate. It's soft and easy to chew. It's only got 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Matt, let's start with the head coach. I was very impressed, man. Like, it was 35 minutes of listening to Billy Donovan talk, but I was engaged, and I thought it was a very informative first, I guess, quote-unquote, official press conference as the Bulls head coach. Like, I get his introductory press conference was something, but it was more just kind of ancillary answers that we had heard from him before. But I think you got down to some of the things that we actually wanted to hear answers from, or at least start to answer, about this roster, specific players, what his strategy is going to be heading into this season. So I was fascinated and very engaged for 35 minutes listening to Billy Donovan the other day.
It was amazing, man. You know, it was the most recent breath of fresh air, which thankfully we've gotten some more of recently. But just listening to Billy talk and answer questions about this player and that player and the kind of basketball that we're, you know, about to see from him and his guys, all of it was just like so beautifully normal. And it was so striking, the difference listening to Billy Donovan talk and listening to and remembering what it felt like to listen to Jim Boylan talk. Because Jim Boylan talking about basketball was almost never actually about basketball. It was vague platitudes, and it was movie quotes, and it was comparing basketball players to football players, and it was, you know, introspection and seasoning, and you gotta toughen up, and children and roads, and it was all like, you know, we can laugh at it now, you know, as the farther we get out of this PTSD phase that Bulls fans have been in the Jim Boylan era and immediately since. But it's just, it's crazy to listen to what Billy Donovan was talking about. And we'll talk more about specifics, but just, you know, one example of Lauri Markkanen needing to recognize mismatches better and getting into the teeth of, you know, the interior defense, finishing stronger at the rim, getting to the free throw line, things that are actually basketball conversation that it's just like, God, this is so refreshing to hear.
Man, it's something that we've been asking for, not even just from the head coach, but from the front office, too. Like, the front office kind of mimicked that over the last 3 years of just talking in these generalities that, I mean, if you were somebody who's been paying attention at all, it's like, it's heard the same press conference 45 different times, you know, spun it different ways. Finally, you're actually getting, like, key details and actual examples from Billy Donovan, which is so nice and refreshing to hear. And other 29 other NBA fan bases out there probably checking in on this podcast and being like, what are you guys talking about? Like, this is the way NBA coaches are supposed to run their team and how they're supposed to talk. And yeah, well, welcome to Chicago, where we haven't had that in a while. So speaking of Markkanen, let's hear Billy Donovan talk about what his overview and vision for Lauri Markkanen is. I thought this was really good, Matt.
I've had some conversations with Lauri. He is a great guy. I think, as I mentioned about Wendell, Lauri, I think when he, you know, even came into league as a freshman, I remember, you know, telling our front court guys at Oklahoma City his rookie year, like, this guy can really, really shoot. You know, and a couple times we closed out short and he drained a couple threes. The next thing you know, we're flying at him, he's going by you. And I do think with a young player as gifted offensively as Lauri is, it does take time for the league to kind of catch up to a player. And I think as people have seen him, and certainly he's had to battle some injuries, you know, he, like Wendell, has got to really find, you know, his identity offensively. Everybody knows he can put the ball on the floor and he can shoot it. But, you know, can we, to your point, try to create some situations for him, you know, where he becomes a little bit more difficult to guard? And I think it's twofold. I think one, it's him understanding how to attack size mismatches. I think the other part of it too is having the team having recognition in transition of when he's open to find him, because when you close to him, he's got enough skill to go by you. And then I think the other part for him is, you know, him getting into the teeth of the defense when he does drive it, a physicality to, you know, finish at the basket, get fouled, get to the free throw line. So I think Lauri has really worked hard this offseason. I think that he is going to continue to evolve and get better. What I do not want him to be from watching film is what I would say would be one-dimensional, just a catch and shoot forward. I think those guys become too easy to guard. So there's a part for him, for Wendell, for Kobe. They're young players. There's a development piece that they will get better and grow through their experiences, you know, and how can we help him grow and get better? And then, you know, in fairness to him, you know, he's battled a lot of injuries. He's missed time, and it's hard, you know, when you're in and out, you're trying to get your rhythm and your timing back. Those things can be challenging. So I think he's a very unique player. We've got to help him. He's got to help himself. But I think he's really, really open-minded because he can do a lot of different things. But, you know, like I had, you know, Gallinari last year, you know, in Oklahoma City, and he was a real problem because, you know, he at times could post, you know, against smaller people. He ended up getting to the free throw line. You could kind of create mismatches, you know, with him because of just his experience. I mean, he's 31 years old. I think these experiences that Lauri are going through right now is only going to help him get better as a player. And we, I think, as a coaching staff, have got to try to help him as well.
I thought that was a really good explanation and a lot of key things in there, Matt, that Bulls fans have been asking about how they're going to be able to get Lauri to be a better player. And a couple of those that stood out, even just besides what you had referenced, which I thought was the main point to it, but like in transition, man, how many times did Markkanen last year just not see the ball for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes straight? And how many times on fast breaks did the Bulls have 3-on-1s? Markkanen was a part of it, and the Bulls couldn't even get a basket, let alone get the ball to Lauri. And I'm curious, too, if Billy Donovan is going to ask Markkanen to be more, I guess, conservative with his, I don't know, that, you know, that weird, like, step-back floater that he's got that he
Dragged
was pretty...
Him. Lowry drag step.
He was pretty good with that in his rookie year, and even to some extent in his second year. But I wonder if he's going to ask him, hey, like, be a little bit more conservative with that, even though that's a tool in your bag, and try to use your body to bully guys underneath. And that's something Boylan just couldn't get out of Markkanen last year. But all of that, man, is very exciting for me to hear. Now I just got to see it implemented.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have a coach who, first of all, is very eager and excited to work with Lowry, as it sounds like Donovan is, and being able to say, okay, well, here's a player that I just coach who I can see a similar skill set and similar potential with, you know, Gallinari has certainly been in the league a lot longer than Lowry has. But just as important as recognizing what Lowry can be is Donovan recognizing, I think, in his comments, and they were slightly veiled, but what Lowry just was last season, which was, and he said, you know, I don't want him to be all nothing other than a stretch four. You know, a 7 foot, you know, power forward who stands around the perimeter and shoots threes, because one dimensional players, as he said, are very easy to guard. We have to make things difficult for our opponent's defense every night. And that will include Lowry being a lot more mobile playing off the ball. And it's something that Lowry said himself in his comments earlier this week with his media availability and just what they were doing back in their mini camp in September, what they've started to do out of the gate so far. Like, we're moving a lot. And it's like the exact opposite of just the traffic cone Lowry that we saw all of last season. So Donovan talking about the other elements and the three levels of Lowry's offensive game that can be opened up if the Bulls play the right way was really encouraging to hear.
You know, it's weird. I'm thinking about it now, and obviously Lowry Markkanen has a lot more athleticism than Nico Mirotic did, but in a lot of ways, that's what you're trying to avoid, right, is a Nico 2.0, where I think the Bulls put Nico in a lot of bad positions that, as far as development-wise and what he was actually able to be used as, and then you see him, you know, shortly before he's dealt away to the Pelicans and has his best year, he's actually utilized and implemented the way he should have been, and that's not to just sit at the three-point line for 90% of the time he's out there, and that's something that they've got to avoid with Lowry, and that's what we saw a lot last year, man. And again, I go back to the lack of involvement. Like, his teammates didn't involve him for stretches of 4 to 6 minutes at a time. It's like, you just can't do that when you've got such a great shooter on the floor like Markkanen. But I also have to put it back on Markkanen a little bit too. It's like, dude, if people aren't getting you the ball, then you gotta move, man. You gotta find ways to get the ball and find ways to get yourself open, so it forces your teammates to have to give you the ball. So a little bit on both, but again, I think this all lines up for Markkanen to have a really, really great year and a bounce back year from last year that was a huge disappointment.
And I think even though we're coming off a disappointing year, I in particular, and I know Bulls fans have a huge range as far as how they feel optimistic or pessimistic about this upcoming season for Lowry, based on the body of work we've seen, but that element to his game, in particular strength, and not shying away from contact like that drag step that you were just talking about, but as Donovan said, finishing through the teeth of the opponent's defense. Because yes, recognizing the mismatch is one thing, and it was really frustrating, you know, for Bulls fans to watch all of last season, where when Lowry had a mismatch, either he didn't demand the ball or he was trying to briefly demand the ball and his teammates didn't get him the ball. But when he did get the ball on a mismatch, he shied away from contact. It was like, dude, you know, mouse in the house, as Stacey says, but like, he couldn't even back down guards. And you're like, what's going on? And maybe some of that was Lowry and whatever that weird oblique and then hip injury was that made him shy away from contact like that. But we always see this muscle that Lowry puts on in the offseason, and then we just don't really see it being put to use. So I hope that Donovan really hammers that home, because if Lowry can turn into a guy who is, of course, a threat behind the three-point line, and a guy who can get points moving in transition, playing off the ball, but can also be a guy who you just throw the ball to and he can get some and ones and he can draw some fouls. And again, you'll have to, you know, earn the respect from refs to do that. But you know, and my buddy Sabine from Outsiders said that about Dirk, like in the first few years of Dirk's career. And yes, the Dirk Lowry comps are overblown, but that Dirk didn't figure out that element to his game until like his third or fourth season in the league, where it's like, oh, I have the size advantage and I can just bully ball and I can get to the free throw line and knock down free throws at an 80 to 85% clip. You do that, you're all of a sudden talking about Lowry being a 20 points per game plus scorer.
It's funny you say that, because I was just looking up Lowry's analytics from last year from B-Ball Index, and one of the things that stood out just looking at his finishing and his foul contact and his foul rate is he was actually in the 91st percentile last year in drawing fouls on post-ups. So maybe getting Lowry in those mismatches more will allow him to get to the free throw line more, a la opening up more shots for people, maybe spacing the floor out a little bit more. I think that just opens up a lot more possibilities for you. And I think it's an important point that you make about his respect from the refs too. Like, look at Zach LaVine. He's in what, his seventh year now? And he's still not getting the full respect that he needs. And he's got one of the best skills available, and that's speed to blow past guys, be able to draw those fouls. So instead of having size, he's got speed. But also too, it's taken him a while to even gain some of that respect from the refs as well. So that's good points on Markkanen. I'm very, very excited to see what he's able to do this season. Let's go to LaVine, though, Matt. Something that we have talked about time and time and time and time again over the last 2 years is LaVine's ability to be consistent in clutch time and how the Bulls approach clutch time and who they're using to be able to close out games. And I think he hit it right on the head when he talked about getting LaVine more options in crunch time situations and seeing what he can do with that. So let's hear from Billy Donovan.
One of the things that happens when you're an elite player offensively like Zach is, I always say this, you know, having Chris Paul, having Russell Westbrook, Paul George, the ball at the end of the game finds those guys. It just finds them. What we've got to be willing to do is make the game easy for Zach and for each other at the end of the game. Certainly when the ball's in his hands, he makes a play and it's not a shot, we've got to be able to get to the next action, the next closeout to attack and to do those things. I think to say to Zach, hey, we're just going to give you the ball and you got to bring us home every night, we got to help him. You know, we got to help him, I think, through movement. We also got to help him if teams are really loading up on him. The next person may need to make a play. And we've got to all be responsible on the court to, in those situations, you know, generate shots. But, you know, if a team decides at the end of the game to trap Zach and to get the ball out of his hands and make someone else have to make a play, we're going to need some other guys to step up as well. I think that's something that's going to be important for this group to try to build out, you know, when we get into training camp, of how we can all play off each other and help each other. And listen, you know, Zach is a guy that can get a shot anytime he wants, and teams are going to probably not want the ball in his hands, but it may lead to somebody else having to make a play. And we've all got to be willing to try to step up and make the next best play.
I think this is an important point, and like for LaVine even too, Matt, the idea that he's got to be more consistent in being able to, once teams start to figure out that he's going to be the first and main option, is finding ways to get his teammates confident enough to take shots in clutch time situations too. I think his youngest teammate in Kobe White is the perfect guy to start to gain some of that confidence. Even last year in his rookie season, Matt, 9.6% of Kobe White's shots came in clutch time. 9.4% of shots came in clutch time for Zach LaVine. So that's a pair of guys, and those are the two highest rated clutch time percentage shots among the Bulls from last year. Those two guys are telling me that those are the two guys you want the balls in their hand late in games. I mean, you could toss Markkanen in there too, but he's got to be more consistent on the offensive end. So for me, it's getting Zach the ball, allowing him to be your main scoring option, but also getting Zach to make the right decisions in clutch time. How many times did he turn over the ball or make, I guess, I don't want to be critical of him, but make just boneheaded plays that you would say, okay, a rookie or a guy in his second year would make that play in the last 2 minutes of a game. We were seeing that more consistently than we thought, even up last year. You know, how many times did he cough up the ball with 2 minutes left and it ended up changing the outcome? So being more consistent on that level, I think, is going to help LaVine as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the late game scenarios and the crunch time minutes. And that's something that Arturas talked about as well when he was given his take on LaVine when he talked to the media earlier this week. But AK did say that LaVine has been, quote, tremendous in the offseason. He's been communicating with me every day with the coaching staff. Communication has been great. He can't wait to get on the floor with his teammates and figure out the way he can win. We can win the game. He has a skill set that is hard to find in our league. But then, you know, the thing that Donovan and AK were both, you know, kind of echoing with LaVine is, all right, how do we take this dynamic, incredibly gifted scorer, this amazing offensive player, and helping him find greater success within a system and not just relying on his hero ball and his, like, you know, his clutch? Because as you pointed out, it was tough to watch. Zach, for all of his talents, had a really tough time in clutch moments this season because the Bulls really didn't have a different option, a second person who could hit those big buckets. We kind of saw Kobe emerge in that sense a little bit, down the stretch of his rookie year. But as Karnaschova said, we just have to put it in a way that's going to be in a team setting. And I think that there is a way that LaVine can feel like in some way a burden will be lifted off of his shoulders when he was carrying so much this past season. And maybe you're not going to look at LaVine with a usage percentage above 30. Because it was, I think it was 31.2 this past season. And it didn't work. The Bulls won 22 games. So I am encouraged that we can still see LaVine as a dynamic scorer, but finding ways for him to also be effective playing off the ball and not asking so much of him.
I mean, listen to this, Matt. Like, in clutch time, last year, Zach LaVine specifically played in 33 games in clutch time moments. That's 5 minutes left in the game, and you're within 5 points either way. Zach LaVine had 109 points in clutch time. The second most scorer on the Bulls in clutch time was Lauri Markkanen at 35 points. So you go from 109 points to 35. So 100, like tenfold. The Bulls need to find a second option scoring, a third option scoring. Your third leading scorer in clutch time was Thomas Satoransky last year with 34 points. After that, it drops down into the teens, Matt. It's Thaddeus Young at 15 points. So again, finding multiple options in clutch time. And I think that can come from Zach being the main ball handler in those situations. He's just got to be better with containing the ball and hanging on to the ball and finding guys in the right situations. But again, Zach needs help. Zach needs shooters to help him out. I think that's the only thing I got on LaVine, though. It sounds like there's high expectations from Billy Donovan himself on what LaVine is going to offer this season. Let's go to a couple other players real quick, Matt, before we kind of wrap up on Billy Donovan. Quickly, here's on Otto Porter and what he thinks is the most important part of Otto Porter this season.
I think for Otto, with the amount of time that he's missed, certainly him being healthy is the most important thing to our team. But, you know, he's been back here. He's been working, which has been great to see. You know, he's on the court. I've always felt like even his time in Washington, he's smart. He's got a really good feel of how to play. He can make a shot. He's a good passer. He's just been a guy that has really not been available very, very much since he's been here. So the more, you know, we can keep him healthy and keep him ready, I think that really, really helps the group. But we'll have to see how he responds, you know, once we really get through this individual player development, one coach, one basket, one ball situation, and can start to move to more 5-on-5.
Let me ask you a question really fast on Otto. I saw that there was a comment made, and maybe it was taken a little out of context because I didn't hear it word for word from Billy Donovan the other day, but said that there might be a limits minute or a minutes restriction on what Otto will play this season, at least to start to try to, again, keep him healthy. I think this is going to open up more. If that is true, I think it's going to open up more opportunities for Patrick Williams right away, which is kind of cool. And I guess maybe for some Bulls fans, maybe a little unexpected too, but it also makes me think that maybe they feel a little bit more confident about Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison's ability and want to keep Otto healthy in case in the back pocket of, in the back of their minds, they're like, maybe if we keep him healthy and somewhat productive, he's got some value at the trade deadline. And there's a couple teams now that have contracts that could match up with Otto or have a trade exception to be able to use should they want to at the trade deadline. Like, that's how I approach this season with Otto, hearing that health is number one importance for them and he may be on a minutes restriction. I think it's all going back to what value ultimately could he bring 3 or 4 months down the road should they decide that maybe trading him is the best option.
Yeah, I mean, being careful with his minutes for those reasons that you just laid out is logical to me, but it also kind of annoys me because it's like, dude, it you're not talking about preserving some aging mid-30s vet that you might try and swing a trade for at the back end of the trade deadline days because he's an expiring contract. Otto Porter Jr. is 27 years old. And we're talking about him like he's either A, a million years old, or B, a superstar who is deserving of the minutes restriction, quote-unquote, load management scenario. And I'm sorry, I just think that's bullshit. Especially for a guy who's going out trying to make a prove-it season for himself, considering he is, again, only 27 and has a couple, at least one, big contracts on deck for him as a free agent next summer. And might think he want to prove his usefulness to the other 29 teams in the league this season. Like, I get that he's, coming off of a couple of injury-plagued seasons. And you don't want to, I'm not talking about playing him 42 minutes a night. But if we're only playing Otto 20, 22 minutes a night and he's healthy, I don't know what the hell we're doing. Because we could talk about optimism for a breakout year for Denzel and or Hutch if we want to. But we all know that Otto is a much more valuable two-way player than either of those guys right now. And he is not a superstar, and he is not a million years old. So load management for him seems ridiculous to me.
I'm with you in the traditional sense of like having Otto play only 20 minutes a night and only finding weird spots to put him in doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially like there's going to be Bulls fans out there, especially if this team's healthy. It's like, why aren't we playing our best players every single night? Like that those guys should be out there for 30 plus minutes a night. I don't care who you are. And that's why I kind of fall back on the idea of maybe they're being more reserved about it because they don't want to. There's no other way to put it, but shit the bet on a possible trade for Otto Porter come 3 months from now. And I know it's hard as a fan to think like that, especially because we haven't played a single game yet. But from the front office's perspective, if this dude's not going to be here long term, he's got one more year of his contract left and you can get something for him at the deadline. I kind of understand it. I kind of understand where they're coming from and wanting to keep him limited on minutes and avoid another situation where he ends up missing 3 or 4 months at a time. But Matt, it also plays into this idea that I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because say this roster stays the same, at least for the first 2 months of the season, the first 30 games or so, I think Billy Donovan's going to use a ton of different lineups. Like, you're going to see Otto play the 3 and the 4 a lot. You're going to see Thaddeus Young being played maybe at times with Otto too. I think you're going to see Patrick Williams and Otto play together a lot. I think you're going to see Chandler Hutchison and Otto play together a lot. Patrick Williams and Hutch play a lot together. I think he's going to switch and see what guys can play multiple positions and what lineups are going to work. And maybe that comes at a little bit of a disadvantage for Otto having to drop down in his minutes total, but I think this is cool. If you want to see Patrick Williams and Chandler Hutchison and truly what those guys have and what the future of those guys are compared to what Otto is while keeping him healthy, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Like, if you had to ask me what I was going to put my money on, my money is on this is just to build up a little bit of Otto's confidence. And if Otto comes out and has a hot start, I don't see why he wouldn't be playing 25, 30, 35 minutes a night, especially in a contract year like you were talking about. So I'm trying to look at it like, okay, there might be a few options here as opposed to just, hey, we're scared that Otto's going to re-hurt himself, so let's just protect him at all costs. Because I'm with you. At some point, I want to see these guys play all together and actually compete.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that I want Otto to play twice as many minutes as Patrick Williams, guys who are probably going to be in that same, 3-4 area as far as Billy Donovan's rotation goes. But I mean, if Otto is only outplaying Denzel and Hutch by a few minutes a night, I will be confused by that. If Otto is healthy, he should clearly be in the starting five at the three, and he should be playing 30 plus minutes a night. It's that simple to me.
It's a good point. Yeah. You're paying the guy 28.5 million, and I know that's not the front office's. The front office didn't make that deal, but I'm with you, man. I have this feeling in the back of my head, like, that they're trying to be very cautious because of his potential value to contending teams in that missing chip, especially because he's on an expiring deal.
But Jordan, what's the trade-off? If you put him, you know, in bubble wrap at the end of the bench so that you can preserve his health to trade him, how are you going to increase his trade value if the other 29 teams around the league are looking and saying, wait, like Otto, an established vet making $28 million this season, isn't getting minutes, but, you know, Denzel Valentine is, Chandler Hutchison is, a rookie, Patrick Williams is? Because, like, yes, in one sense, you preserve the trade value by having him healthy. But if he's not out there proving his worth on the court, then you're killing his value at the same time.
That's an excellent question, and I'm curious if that falls into line of, like, maybe the Bulls called around the league over the last month or so and tried to at least gauge what Otto's value was, and maybe they heard, like, hey, yeah, there's little to no value for Otto right now, especially on the contract, and the dude hasn't played hardly any time over the last two seasons. So you do bring up an excellent point, though. Like, that's the kind of the advantages and disadvantages you weigh, is he's healthy, but he's hardly been on the floor. He's not exposed to 30, 35 minutes a night, where a team that's contending might want him to play that many minutes. Like, you're going to need him to play that amount in the playoffs. Can he do that? I think those are the options that you weigh.
And that's why it was so silly to me that Bulls fans kept suggesting Otto in all these various trades and hypotheticals in the offseason and leading up to draft night. It's like, oh, trade Otto, trade Otto, trade Otto. And, like, I realized that the contract he's on, you know, is a big reason for that, because people are talking about, you know, acquiring this player or that player, or this combo of players and matching salaries. But Bulls fans who just thought that Otto was such a great tradable piece this past offseason, I was like, guys, what teams around the league are clawing to give up assets for Otto, who has played, what, like 10 minutes in the last season and a half of basketball? Like, come on.
Yeah, it's got to be a team that's desperate for a wing and is looking to save some money as well, and not worried about shying away from potentially maybe trading away a young asset or maybe even a future draft pick. I think that's what the Bulls should target the deadline. But, I mean, we can have these conversations.
I will forever remember the 2020 offseason as the Otto Porter Jr. Cristiano Felicio trade package offseason.
poor
fans, y'all crazy.
Felicio isn't. I'm still very confident in saying there's not a single team. I don't even care if it's for a salary dump. There's not a single team out there trading for Felicio. Just the optics of that on social media does not bode well for 29 other teams in the NBA. Even if they're immediately cutting him,
I don't know. I think the Pistons could use another center, man. They've only got like six right now.
Felicio for Jello Ball. Who says no?
Honestly, I'd take that deal. I like all we've seen from LiAngelo is like what? Like some G League stuff and some international play, and I don't think he's that good. He's nowhere near as good as his two brothers, but I'd still take that deal.
Yeah, we got some Lifetime videos of him too, just wet in threes, like he's Hoodie Mello in his prime. I don't know. Good for him, though. Good for LeVar. He got all three of his sons into the NBA, like you said, and people doubted him for it, too. So I have to pay attention to that. But Matt, real quick, I know we're up against time here, but I wanted to play this. This is about Kobe White and communication. Thought it was really great. And the last little bit of sound from Billy Donovan.
One of the things that was really great for me, you know, having a guy like Chris Paul last year, or even Russell Westbrook, they are great verbal leaders. And I do think as a young player like Kobe, there was times last year he was on the ball. There was times he was on the ball, and he's obviously had some incredible runs scoring. But I think when you're at the point guard position, you've got to find ways to make the people around you better. And a lot of times that's through communication, that's through talking. I think that's an area that he, as he gets more and more experience, will be able to do. I think for him, you know, I think the hardest position to go from high school to college or college to the NBA is playing the point guard position, because you're running the team, you're making decisions when you're out there, you've got to communicate, you got to do those things. And at the same point, he was a rookie last year, and he's going through his own transition, his own experience as a player. That's a lot to put on him. So I think maybe the next step for him would be, you know, he's a great competitor. He's really, really emotional in a good way. Like, he really cares and he's passionate. How do you take that and now have that impact the rest of the group? And I think that would be the next step for him in terms of what kind of vocal leader can he become, you know, as a point guard.
Man, I want Coby White to be so good, so badly, man. Like, it's everything we've been asking for in a player, right? Even down to the intangible things, like just the pure passion for basketball and the pure, like, ability to care every single day and care about the other people. And he's just a genuinely good dude, too. And he's got a ton of skill, Matt, so... if he can become a vocal communicator for this team, especially if the Bulls end up dealing Zach LaVine, like, the Bulls are desperately going to need that, especially if we're talking about picking off some of the veterans on the team as the season goes on, like Thaddeus Young potentially leaving or them trading away Thomas Satoransky. This team could quickly get really, really young, and you're going to need a vocal leader that guys are going to respect. And I think that it would be a huge step in the progress of Coby White. And I'm not saying that needs to happen within one season. This might be something that Billy Donovan continues to try and develop and strengthen with Coby White over the next several seasons. But for him to say that at the start of the season, before even having Coby White as his point guard for one game, is very, very encouraging to me.
It is. And I think I was certainly surprised to hear from Donovan, basically confirming that we're going to start this season with Coby as this team's lead point guard. Because it does contradict a little bit of what we heard, that the new front office, upon arrival and an initial evaluation of the roster, saw Coby more as a two guard and a shooting guard than a point guard. We did see Coby increase his playmaking skills a little bit towards the back end of the rookie year. I want to say he averaged over 6 assists per game over his final 11 games, February into March, when he was playing really, really well. And he did say himself in his press conference earlier this week that that was one of the things that he was working on this offseason as far as the specifics of his game. He mentioned finishing at the rim better. He mentioned working on his pull-up. But he also cited specifically working on his decision-making in the pick-and-roll, which I think is so important when you saw how effective OKC was in the pick and roll with Billy Donovan and CP3. And of course, you know, CP3 is a dude who has a decade plus, dozen plus years of orchestrating and running offenses in the NBA. And, you know, and Coby is miles and miles behind that. But knowing that that's what he should be focusing on this past summer is in itself a great step, because it's like, remember last year when Coby White came into training camp and was like taking these, you know, mid-range shots that he was so efficient with at UNC, and the team was like, wait, nope, timeout. Boylan's like, nope, sorry, that's not allowed. And Coby basically just got immediately shut down in training camp right out of the gate on something that he'd been working on in the offseason. So now Coby has actually spent his offseason working on something that will be translated into games, we hope, with this bigger amount of responsibility being put on his shoulders. So I'm tentative and I'm cautious about Coby as this team's lead point guard, but I'm also extremely excited to see it play out, because the kid's got unlimited potential and unlimited heart.
You're spot on about that. And like, as much shit as we give Jim Boylan, I think the one thing to give him a little bit of credit on, even though it was to the detriment of the season last year as a whole in wins and losses, I mean, he forced Zach and Coby to be in the top 10 percentile in finishing right at the rim. And that, like, for me, as somebody who knows Zach and Coby can shoot it from the mid-range at a amazing clip, and know that those guys can shoot consistently from the outside, if Donovan's going to start to reincorporate that part of Zach and Kobe's game, and they can build and strengthen off of what they learned last year at finishing around the rim and being able to draw fouls and kind of that drive to the rim, kick out when you're getting doubled, I think that only benefits the Bulls. So I have to give Jim Boylan a little bit of credit for forcing two of his biggest shooters to say he either take a shot from outside or get to the rim. It sucked for the Bulls last year, and it didn't work as a team total. But individually, I think it helped strengthen part of Kobe White's game, and it helped strengthen part of Zach LaVine's game, as oddly as that is to say about anything Jim Boylan does strategy-wise. But we'll see if that's implemented.
I just blacked out while you were talking about Jim. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I've never yanked, guys. I'm not.
I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks for listening today. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our little bit of a breakdown from head coach Billy Donovan. Very excited to get into your mailbag questions. We're having a second episode drop today, so make sure you check your feeds. In the next couple of hours as you're listening to this, you'd have a second episode. Hit us up with your questions, though, 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back later today with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com